Welcome back to Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. There's always a new trend afoot in the world of fashion, and one of the changes that seems to be going on now is that some of the beautiful glossy magazines that used to tell us about fashion trends are now delivering those fashion pieces as retailers. I learned this from Maryland Morning's regular guest and fashion advisor, Zoe Washington, who's just back from a grand European tour. Welcome back, Zoe.
Thanks for having me.
We're used to fashion magazines lining the checkout aisles at grocery stores. Is the popularity of these magazines growing or dwindling?
I would say in large part they're dwindling, unfortunately, being somebody whose entire job is tied to publications. It's unfortunate to say, but yes, their popularity is dwindling. I don't think that we're going to see, you know, clear checkout aisles anytime soon, but they aren't as relevant as they used to be.
Why not?
I think that's because, one, the digital age. People are getting their content online, and that's just sort of the fact of the matter. And I think that when that first started, especially in the early 2000s, when that really started to take hold, a lot of publications didn't know what to offer online. You know, they didn't know, should we be having people pay for this service and information? Should this content be free? And then it became sort of a monster that constantly needed feeding. So when you go online and you look at, say, HarperSBazaar.com or Vogue.com, there's content that's specifically made for the website. There's content from the magazine. What content they choose to include, whether or not they want you to pay for it, it's very confusing. And I think it's hard for them because you have to constantly feed the beast. People want more and more content, and they want it for free. And they're used to now not paying for it. So a lot of publications are having to create new editorial staffs just to keep up with this demand, but they're not necessarily seeing the return on the revenue. Of course, there's ad revenue that they can get from it, but it's nowhere near what they were able to charge for print publications.
And all that parallels what we've seen in the news business, in news magazines and newspapers, more of which now are setting up a paywall and saying, you can read a few articles for free, but if you really want to get deep into our reporting, you have to help pay for it.
Exactly. And I think it's difficult for more lifestyle or fashion-based publications because, you know, if you don't know what's happening in the world via the New York Times or Wall Street Journal or what have you, that's not a good thing. You need to know what's going on in the world. If you don't know about culottes, you're still okay. You know, you don't need to pay to find out about the 6 best culottes to buy for spring, summer. That's something you can do without. So I think that they're realizing they need to offer content. If they're going to create a paywall, they need content that is worthy of that.
And so are we talking more about more lifestyle and less just straight fashion?
I think so. I think what you see publications doing now is that they're trying to build themselves into brands. It's always been the case in a lot of ways, publications kind of steered the ship for a lot of big lifestyle brands that you see now, or even the sort of 360 approach that a lot of department stores took. So in that way, they were pioneers, but now they have a lot of catching up to do. So you'll see stuff like Allure. You know, Allure might get into creating their own beauty line, or Essence Magazine might get into creating their own hair extension line, because beauty and hair is something that is very important to their reader. Building out an entire brand that lives beyond the publication is very important right now. So whether that's going into e-commerce or, in the case of Essence, for example, creating the Essence Music Festival and doing subsequent festivals around the world, so that you create an experience that's tied into the readership.
On WIPR, this is Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cass, speaking with Zoe Washington, a fashion editor and CEO of the company Little Bird, a fashion consulting service. It could be that people who read fashion magazines aren't expecting a sort of good housekeeping consumer guide approach, but doesn't this sort of undercut the credibility of a magazine if it's in business for itself, if it's selling its own makeup line?
Completely. And that's why it's been a very difficult transition for them. I think you see magazines like Teen Vogue, for example, has a very popular line of bedding. Now, that makes sense because Teen Vogue is about more than just at-home services and at-home goods. So having a line of bedding dedicated to the teen market makes sense and doesn't necessarily get in their way. But for a lot of magazines like Harper's Bazaar, Allure, Vogue, Elle, the idea of broaching into e-commerce has been very tricky. Shop Bazaar launched a couple of years ago, and what they do is the traditional sort of like click and buy model where it takes you to the site of the actual designer that creates this garment, and they might get a percentage of that sale, sort of like reward style kind of thing. But other magazines like Lucky, the now defunct Lucky, went full steam ahead in trying to, and it made sense. It made sense to a lot of people. Okay, here's Lucky Magazine. It's a magazine about shopping. The pages were very shoppable. That was the whole point of the magazine. So having a shoppable website made sense. And so when they went down that road, the problem was is, okay, are we handling the back end? Who's handling the back end of the shopping experience? Having an e-commerce site is a very labor-intensive project. So, and already, you know, a group of people who are already stretched a little bit too thin providing content for online and the publication are now having to, what, edit this website that's going to be offering clothes that people can buy. It's very difficult. And they get in their way. I mean, you do wonder, okay, is this really the best hair comb? Is this the best button-down shirt? Is this the best jean? Or is it that you guys make it?
So you said Lucky is defunct.
Lucky is defunct now. And Lucky transitioned to Lucky Shops, which was a website that was basically the content. They were almost kind of trying to go backwards, like the Net-a-Porter model, where there was an e-commerce site that then also grew out into be a publication. So Lucky was doing the reverse of that, a publication that was trying to become an e-commerce site. And it was very difficult. I think that they did have some success, but I don't think that the audience was quite there for it.
How does social media factor into this?
I think that with social media right now, they're trying to figure out how to make, for example, Instagram shoppable. I think all of that has made it a little bit difficult for a lot of publications, in that this is more content that they need to be feeding out, that they need to be blowing out from their core stories, that they're paying very good salaries for people to create. So for social networking and all the social media sites, it's a great way to stay in contact with their readers and to know what their readers are listening to and what they are responding to. But at the same time, it's a double-edged sword. It's okay, well, we have this social media, what do we do with this captive audience? How do we try to sell things without seeming like ads for ourselves?
And do you see social media affecting fashion choices?
Oh, yes, there's no question. Stars are born and made on Instagram, you know, so there are people who are just shoveling product out there. And that really gets into the blogging and social media stars that are propelling the fashion world and are disruptors to the traditional fashion publication model. So here, you know, there's a blogger who will, you know, take pictures of herself walking around the streets of Paris. And how much more effective is that? Some one person showing you what she likes, then a whole staff of people who may or may not be getting kickbacks from advertisers, you know, because putting this on the page. You know, this one person likes it and maybe she's getting it for free. So that whole thing is they're trying to catch up now with traditional print media and their ethos. It's a difficult situation. And I'm not quite sure who's going to come out on top, to be honest.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Zoe Washington, fashion editor and CEO of the company Little Bird, a fashion consulting service for teens and tweens. You can read more about her work on our website, wypr.org/Marilyn Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. Marilyn Morning is an original production
of your public radio,
WYPR,
in Baltimore.
The show is produced by John and McCone.
We have production help from
Christy Forrest
and Scott Seiss.
Nathan Sterner directs and engineers.
I'm Tom Hall.
And I'm Sheila Cast. On this day in Maryland history, 1805, the trustees of the young Roman Catholic Diocese of Baltimore approved the design of Benjamin Henry Latrobe for a cathedral to be built between West Franklin and Mulberry Streets. It took 16 years, including several financial setbacks, to construct the building we now call the Basilica. It was dedicated in 1821. I'm Sheila Cast. We're back on Friday. Please join us.